My name is Taka. I am a SAP solution architect, and I'm doing SAP in Microsoft for the past 15 years. So my career is pretty much dedicated to SAP, like Ben and Chris and also Matt Olish and Evian in SAP Microsoft team. You know, it's a long time for SAP and Microsoft, and pretty much like you. I'm based out of Redmond, Seattle, our corporate headquarters, and covering Americas. And my team is quite interesting because my team sit in Microsoft Enterprise Partner Organization, which means partner is really important for Microsoft to really scale in this cloud business. So this is a big investment for our Microsoft Corporation to keep increasing the cloud solution architect. And SAP is a big bet for Microsoft. So I am the one of the SAP architect to really sit down together with enterprise partner like you. Then if you have any RFP or RFI, we do our best to respond, help you to respond to the customer as quick as possible. I think someone asked an interesting question. What's engagement process for you guys to engage Microsoft? My team, it is almost every day, we get a query from a partner, then they are given like a 1 week time frame to respond to RFP, RFI. We do our best to really help you to respond to such a customer's query as soon as possible. So sometimes, my partner asked me to, respond to RFP like within 2 or 3 business days, and I cannot guarantee, but my team do our best. So I am the one of the 60 cloud solution architects who are sitting in the enterprise partner organization. I have my colleagues in UK and also India. So my team is pretty much in global coverage. Okay. So I hope you enjoyed yesterday's session, and it was non-HANA NetWeaver system. Just wanted to do a recap from from my perspective. So was yesterday's session was very useful for each of you? I just wanted to make sure that there's nothing we have missed to cover. I can check my note. Then I think we got some question. The room is different, so I cannot really remember who asked these questions. But there's one question on the storage design and. Also, how to take a backup, and also, the hybridity. These are kind of open questions. I think Ben, did amazing session to cover this session. But I just have some additional slide, and so I hope this is useful for recap for day one. So today's agenda is AM is pretty much, this is non-HANA. I mean, non-HANA is still, very basic for you to start to cover, HANA on Azure. So, AM session is still very useful for you to, start to do something on HANA on Azure. So you cannot skip, day one's contents, even if your team is pretty much bias and the interest in HANA on Azure, HANA on cloud business. So we just want to recap for day one contents. My session is more building, setting up the entire system. So I just wanted to quickly go through the setup process of the NetWeaver SQL Server on Azure system. This is pretty much applicable to SAP and Oracle on Azure, which is very interesting, and I have quite a few opportunity with my partner. Customer has unique Oracle system, And they are hoping to migrate to SAP on Oracle database on Azure, because HANA is a bit too early for my customer. So AM session is pretty much applicable to SAP on SQL, SAP on Oracle, SAP on AAC, SAP on DB2. And to some extent, this is also applicable to SAP on HANA on Azure. So AM session is really important. This afternoon, Brian McCutcheon, from SAP Microsoft Technology Center, and also, I think, PM session is pretty much HANA on Azure. This is a very brand new contents, and I was so busy to build these contents. This is the first time to show off to my customer and partner. So I have to admit that Microsoft is still new in this HANA business, but like Satya Nadella, our CEO, presented in the Sapphire on the keynote stage, this is our strong commitment. We are now endorsing SAP HANA in the Microsoft Cloud. So this is a big change for Microsoft, and this is we are running very hard in this HANA on cloud business. So in this afternoon, we share all the technical architecture contents to you, but we are at the same time we are very eager to hear your opinion to make our solution even better before we release this in August or September timeframe. So we are eager to hear your feedback to make ourselves even better for your business. Okay. So I think just quickly about just recap for day one. So I think yesterday's case study session, we just you did kind of case study session was it was like a sizing, just getting a customer's requirement, then do a sizing and grand design the entire architecture, then just responding to customer with code. So although it was a just 30-minute session, but I hope it was useful. This is pretty much a simulation of what I'm doing with my partner at this moment. So I just have some additional slide, and anyone can jump in if you have any question. So this is pretty much kind of another case study, like this customer Contoso running SAP on SAP NetWeaver in their on-premise legacy data center, which consists of a non-production system and production system. Then just showing a number of CPU core and the physical memory and the DB size. Then they're using a traditional SAN storage, and they are having they have legacy tape-based backup, so everything is legacy. So let's say this customer running a Windows 2008 R2 SQL, and SAPS is a 30K SAPS, etc. Then the CIO of this company, Contoso, are looking into the cloud migration. Then I think someone asked us yesterday, what is I/O performance, or high availability, or OSDB is a 2008, and the latest version is the Windows 2016, and the SQL Server 2016 will be certified in this August or September timeframe. So customer, for this customer, HANA is a bit too early, so they need to do an OSDB upgrade, then also need to migrate to cloud as well. So I think maybe this might be useful for all the NetWeaver on Azure opportunity in terms of sizing. I mean, this is SAP's recommendation, and we are Microsoft is pretty much trying to align with SAP's recent recommendation to architect the SAP system, which means SAP system should consist of a database. Then historically, you know, it used to be just a big chunk of central instance. So database, CI, and others. But with the latest architecture of SAP NetWeaver, this is SAP's recommendation to have tiny central service like Ben mentioned yesterday. I mean, central service is a very tiny single point of failure, which is NQ and also message server. So rather than keep running a big chunk of central instance, SAP recommend us and you to have a separate central service, and all the dialogue and update process, they are not single point of failure. So we are supposed to have a bigger chunk of AP server. So central service, AP, and database, these three are element. So I think all the SAP architects should know this concept. Then what is the SAPs for AP and central service? And what is the first subs this database need? How many IOPS this database need? What is the current DB volume? Then we do a mapping between our subs list of each Azure VM type, like you did yesterday. Then if this customer requires zero recovery point objective, then the recovery time objective is just less than 1 hour, 2 hours. Then we have a solution to set up a high availability in cloud. So number of VMs like we did in yesterday's case study session, two central service server, two app server, and two database servers. Then you can also design storage like this, because this is a production system. So it is Microsoft's strong recommendation not to use a standard storage, because standard storage, my team has supported quite a few customers. Then the customer's feedback to a standard storage is latency is not very stable. IOPS is not very stable. So the benefit of having a premium storage, although this is a slightly additional cost, it's not a big additional cost. Can you hear me okay? Okay. So I have two microphones. It's really heavy. I mean, one is for recording, one is for you. Sorry. So, I can show you price table of premium storage in the later slide, but the benefit of having a premium storage is you are going to see a single digit millisecond latency, like 2 or 3 milliseconds. This is very stable. This is really critical for you to secure writing operation, like SAP doing batch input, for example. Yeah, I understand. Okay, so
is the latency for only write operations to the log in single digits, or for read operations from the data files as well?
Yeah, so the question is, I'm saying latency is really slow, really low and stable. And is this critical for writing operation, or is it critical for read operation as well? The answer is, this is a pretty much database, relational database discussion. This should be applicable to SAP HANA as well. I mean, if you can imagine relational database, including SQL Server, Oracle, HANA, it is actually a database software doing a sequential writing operation to a log file. In case of SQL Server, it is transaction log. In case of Oracle, it is a read log. This is sequential writing operation. Then latency matters very much. In case of reading operation, there's no way for relational database software to read from a transaction log. It is more reading operation from a database file. So that is why I am asking to attach premier storage for a database file as well. IOPS is this matters rather than latency. Latency is more related to log, transaction log, database log, and IOPS matters for more database file. We are asking to attach premier storage for both. Are you hearing okay? Okay. Does that answer the question?
No, it does not, in the sense that, the DB read time, per read, having that in, under 10 milliseconds is very critical for SAP, right? It's, so that really is, disk seek and
okay.
Latency. It's got, IOPS is good, mm-hmm. right? But if it can handle 20,000 IOPS, but each IO is taking mm-hmm. 100 milliseconds to come back,
right? Okay.
And that's not acceptable.
Yeah, when I, checked, customer, we sometimes do, system review. So we just go through all the SAP transaction, basic transaction, and check latency for writing and read operation. Then I think I have a slide. We have criteria. So for reading operation from a database file, we always check latency, or there's SAP transaction in which you can see latency of read operation and writing operation. You said 10 milliseconds. This is.
Yeah, if it is under 10 milliseconds, it's really good.
Yeah, it's very good. In reality, I would say 20 milliseconds is kind of stressful. If you just go beyond 30 milliseconds, I have to say to my customer and partner, oh, this IO is not well designed. So this is how we communicate with my customer partner. Yeah, so you are right. Latency for this database file also important, and we are also checking. Okay. Any other question? Okay. Oh, yep. Can you use your micro? Yeah. So the question is how this IOP is calculated. So I said 20,000 subs, 20,000 IOPS is actually, as you maybe you can Bing or you can Google, Microsoft Azure Premium Storage P30 disk will give you 5,000 IOPS per disk. One P30 is 5,000. So by having a 4 P30 disk, then you can have 20,000 IOPS. So this is coming from the customer's requirement. Also in reality, sometimes customer do not know how many IOPS they need. So that is why we are not crystal clear to answer yesterday's question on IO design. But I have additional slide after this how to design the IO in SAP on Azure. System. Okay. So this is how you select the appropriate Azure VM type, and you can still choose if you want to go with high availability option, or you can skip high availability and just going with say one or two single VM deployments. And you can also decide how many premium storage or standard storage needed for this system. Then Microsoft never asks customer to do a big one migration. So although we are fully committed to be able to run the most mission critical SAP system in the Microsoft cloud, but in front of the customer, this is also a benefit of a cloud. It is actually a customer choice, and Typically, it is phase migration. So it's not big bang. Customer can begin their cloud migration journey anytime with a non-production system. So I think, you know, as many SAP specialists might know, it is actually, you know, SAP system copy. So once you set up, you know, a network connection between customers' on-premise data center to Azure, we have quite a few data centers in the US, then you can do a system copy, or you can do a backup restore. Then you can migrate dev test system first from on-premise in Azure. So it is just same system copy, and OSDB upgrade is also possible, or can be backup restore of the database. Then, you know, many of our customer is doing, what's next? It is actually, you know, the disaster recovery environment setup. I'm just, you know, explaining the typical, you know, phase migration, you know, process, you know, for you, rather than doing everything, you know, at one time. So the benefit of, you know, having a disaster recovery environment in Azure, in the cloud, I mean, you can set up, you know, SQL Server log shipping, or maybe Oracle Data Guard, or in case HANA is a data source, maybe you might want to set up a HANA system replication. Then, you know, you can easily set up a database replica in Azure, then it should work. The benefit of having a replica in cloud is, you know, so many customers do care about, you know, downtime when they migrate the production system from one place to another. So downtime minimize is always, you know, it's a critical topic. Because you have a production database in production database copy here in the cloud. So when you do you know, migration of production system to Azure, you can utilize this replica system. So it can be another system copy. Or it can be you know, database backup restore. You can utilize, you know, you have you know, the real-time copy of production database here. So you can do a system copy here. Then you can set up high availability if needed. You can attach premium storage if needed. You can you know, have ASCS clustering with Sios data keeper if it's needed. Then this way, okay, go ahead, your question. You can use a microphone if you like.
So really look at this. This is a standard SAP environment. And what I'd like to see, any best practices or suggestions, because it's never ECC by itself. Mm-hmm. Right, you have a lot of inbound and a lot of outbound. Mm-hmm. And in a retail side, you have a lot of DSD connections. So when we migrate to cloud and you look at the larger ecosystem, mm-hmm. Are there any things like, you know, when we're doing the sizing here, it's good, mm-hmm. But it's again very SAP centric. Mm-hmm. And most customers are worried about, I have 300 odd interfaces going across the mm-hmm. board. Mm-hmm. Which do I leave on-prem and which do I really migrate to cloud? Mm-hmm. That's becomes a much more holistic story.
Yeah. So, I mean, once you do it, you know, so the question is more integration with, you know, other non-SAP or, you know, non-cloud system. So how you know, the, you know, customer can, you know, keep the those, you know, existing integration, you know, continue to work. Actually, you know, sorry, I think this is the last slide. So, because this Azure network, this can be an internet VPN, then it is Azure Virtual Network, or in case of SAP, it is more likely to be Express Route. This is MPLS wide area network, so it's a private network, skipping internet completely, but still it is kind of a transparent extension of the corporate network that the customer currently have. So although IP address and subnet might be different from old system to new system, but still, this is a kind of transparent, expansion of the customer's corporate network. So the legacy system like this, they might need to change their IP address that they are going to talk to once you do a migration. But still, there's nothing else for you to just care about.
Question number two is, when you look at your express route that drops into the corporate MPLS, mm-hmm. Should it be closer to the data center? Because when you're running a global environment, mm-hmm. and sometimes you've seen customers saying that I have issues in my current data center, mm-hmm. It's hosted in Dallas, but people coming in from Asia Pacific, Australia have challenges. You're saying move to the East Coast or to the West Coast, one of the data centers. When we look at the express route connection, do we just drop it into any hop within the MPLS corporate WAN, or do you say that there is a specific point that you recommend that you drop it so that you see the latency issues get resolved from an end user perspective? Mm.
Yeah, so the question is more how to optimize the wide area one network performance if customer is very multinational and they have a global footprint. So I think I do not have a perfect answer to it, because as you can imagine, physically physically the data center customer choose the US East data center, then how my the user coming from Asia or Africa or maybe Brazil so there are, physically there are many hops between end user and Azure. So I think typical case is even within the customer, customers different offices in the world, they are connected through between with AT&T or Verizon or those MPLS one. There are many hops for Asian user to reach the US office within their corporate network, then they can connect to Azure US East. Even if we set up 1 Gbps access route from their US New York office to Azure US East, but still there are many hosts within the customer's corporate network. So this is always $1 million question. I mean, ideally, just to simply boost the network performance, we have to ask customer to have as many access route connection. But that is not the likely in reality.
Yeah, so I think the question was more like, is it one express route, or do you see in a scenario with customers multiple express routes by any chance?
I could probably help with that.
Yeah. Go ahead. Thank you.
So you don't really have to worry about express route, because the way it works is the fact that you have what we call a peering point, a place where a customer kind of enters the Microsoft fiber, right? That's usually East or West US, has no bearing at all on what region or data center you chose to deploy your Azure stuff in, right? Express route, a certified express route, which they all are, has to have dual connections in. So what that means is said customer, wherever they are, called Dallas if you like that, AT&T or somebody provides redundant connections into the Microsoft Fiber. AT&T does have a location in Dallas where they get on the Microsoft Fiber. At that point, it gets on our ring and it goes to whatever data center you need. Not a concern, not something you have to worry about. Just push that out of your mind. As he said, express route, that's that guaranteed SLA performance to get the type of latency guarantee that you're looking for Azure, SAP. Yes, that's bad.
So I have seen case where the whole MPLS went down. So we went to site-to-site VPN, for the other connectivity, so we're still in business. Do you recommend something like that? You know, because you have basically the express route, which is one MPLS, even though it's supposed to have some redundancy, but you're using basically the same carrier, the same.
Yes, you're exactly correct. That express route has the ability of saying, I'll fall back to VPN automatically. That's a pretty cool thing. For those customers who don't rely totally upon their WAN provider, they do dual WAN connections, dual express routes. But that's not a Microsoft problem they're solving. Mm-hmm. That's a provider problem they're solving. And that's up to them however they want to do it. How you enter the Microsoft fiber, not really our concern, right? We have many ways to get that done. Mm-hmm. If you want dual providers, that's an amazing story.
Okay. I mean, do you see customer using both VPN and, Express?
Yes, I do see VPN and Express Route for lots of reasons, some combination of that.
Okay.
It's all over the place, right? It's what meets their needs. If it's a mission critical, such as SAP we're talking about today, that's going to be Express Route, period, right? That's the only way you'd really do that. Now, in all transparency, they start the VPN connection because it takes a month to get Express Route up and running, right? That's a walk before you run kind of scenario.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I just prepared many slides to kind of illustrate, you know, this is option one in which, you know, Microsoft recommending a multiple express route from a different location. Option two is, you know, kind of more reasonable, you know, having express route to a primary data center. And for disaster recovery second data center, you know, it can be a site-to-site VPN because the data center will not be used until, you know, customer has a disaster. Or maybe, you know, customer can set up just one single express route to one location, then by having express route premium option, then, you know, Microsoft can, connect US data center, European data center, Asian data center within the Microsoft, you know, inter data center network. So there are many options that, and I have many slides which illustrate, I think you can download if you like, you know, this is just one of the many slides.
Related question. In this scenario, and we are kind of seeing this with one of our current customers, you know, when you move the productive system or the non-productive systems, the VNet which you have created on the Azure side, is it requiring an IP address change for all the productive and non-productive systems? Because that's a big deal for customers if that's required. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a discussion yesterday, you know, where we said that if there is routing going on, you know, on the express route, you cannot use the same IP addresses.
Okay.
And then, you know, all interfaces, you know, a lot of things need to change, even though you might be using host names, et cetera, right? There are a number of things where you use IP addresses still.
So the question is, IP addresses are going to be different once, you know, customer do a cloud migration. My answer, I think I have, you know, there are many variety of answer to the question because this is really interesting question. But my personal experience is, you know, IP addresses will be very likely to be different from my original one. But, you know, there is a solution to kind of minimize all the impact to end user or subsystem like this. So, you know, I think the intent of the background of your question is, you know, you want to minimize the impact to the existing system. Then ideally, you do not want to touch IP address setting embedded into these legacy system and end users. I think, you know, if you look at how Microsoft IT, as you might know, Microsoft ourselves, you know, we are heavy user of SAP. Although Microsoft has its own ERP, but you know, we are one of the biggest users of SAP. And how we, you know, how we address to your question is, you know, we are utilizing DNS server. So although IP address going to be different, but host name, you can keep using the same host name. So I forgot to, you know, have a DNS server in Azure and the corporate data center. But you can anytime, you can change the, you know, A record, CNAME record in the DNS server. So keep using the same host name, but you can change the IP address. Then it might take time to, you know, reflect all the changes to the all the DNS server, it might take, in case of Microsoft, it takes 2 hours or so to reflect the, all the changes to the all the DNS server. Then, you know, client need to refresh the, you know, DNS cache. But, you know, that's how, you know, Microsoft IT and many of my customers, you know, doing to kind of minimize the impact of the, you know, cloud migration and also OSDB or infrastructure migration.
Actually, just a quick follow-up. So host names, you're saying put a new one, because in we also spoke about ADFS before and potentially extending the customer AD out to the Microsoft cloud. If that is the case, then you cannot even change, you cannot have the same host name because they'll be both in the same Active Directory, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do not have enough time to, you know, go through all the technical details of how we can do it, but we have a really nice slide. I think it's very relevant to your interest, like, you know, how to set up a disaster recovery system in Azure first before, you know, just starting a production system. We have a really nice white paper. I think I can find our white paper, how we, you know, you can keep using the same host name in SAP App Server and central instance using a Windows registry, etc. I mean, I think that might be useful.
All right, thank you.
Quick question. Are there any tools? So like I've heard that there's a tool called Cloud Endure that you can use in AWS to migrate any OS image out from either physical or virtual over to AWS. Just a tool that replicates OS seamlessly, and then you can kind of take the image and then do post-processing on it. So are there any such tools that Azure supports or recommends for, you know, eliminating or making the copy faster?
Sorry. So the question is there any tool to help migration to Azure? It's not Amazon, right?
I was just giving an example, right?
Yeah, okay.
The Cloud Endure is an example of what I've seen other than just SAP tools or mm-hmm. database tools, right? Are there any other tools in our toolkit that we can leverage?
Yeah, I think Yeah,
let me... So we have something called ASR that will replicate off a VM that is on-premise onto Azure. Predominantly, though, what we find when we build these systems out in Azure, we don't copy what's on-premise because we have to do the sizing relative to the VM and the storage design relative to it. So almost all the times that we've implemented this, we have created a configuration. So the design that we use has kind of, and you may have got into this yesterday and you may be getting into later on, has really kind of two pivots on it. We look at systems that run at 100%, 50%, and 10, 20%, and that normally differentiates, are they running two-tier or three-tier architectures? And they may have different requirements relative to the storage and logs for each level. We then pivot again on HA and DR. So we essentially come up with a series of defined configurations. We then build that configuration out in Azure, as opposed to trying to copy that out. It's relatively quick for us to go grab the appropriate OS type and to install on top of that. That actually gets us the cleanest configuration. Then I can use that over and over again. So once I have that, I can copy that out. So we haven't found, even though there are tools like ASR, which moves that VM directly in there, I don't have the detailed control of the storage architecture I need to be able to normally do that. So it's great for getting it up there and recovering it, but really when we're looking at certainly production systems, staging systems, we're going to want to design that configuration out. And that actually isn't the slowest part of this. You know, if that was a big issue, then we'd probably spend more time on it. It's really about how do I get that data once I have it, if it's a DB migration or it's a backup, how do I recover that into Azure, copy that up, and then process that into the system. Is that kind of where you were going? Or
Yeah. So SAP system copy, database backup restore. You know, there's nothing fun, just nothing new for you. But this is the most reliable and proven, you know, method in case of SAP cloud migration. So this is kind of, you know, just, you know, simple, high level, you know, flowchart. Then, yeah, by applying additional SAP support, basic support package in advance in the original system, then you can do, you know, OSDB upgrade, like, you know, upgrading to the SQL 2016, upgrading from Oracle 11G to 12C, et cetera. Then, yeah, this is you know, this is nothing new. Then, yeah, I think you know, maybe Ben can upload the very latest PowerPoint of this the version. But I have just put it, you know, just jot down all the you know the things to notice because migration was not covered yesterday. I just realized so. But this is very important, and more importantly, you know, how to minimize the downtime. So that's why I suggested to you know have a disaster recovery replica environment in Azure first, then you can do the migration, you know, maybe over the weekend. And also, I think I can quickly cover this. Then you can see this slide, you know, if you download the PowerPoint, you know, from this morning. So this is the kind of storage sizing guideline. Although this might not be perfect, I mean, we do not have a classic ratio between SAPs and IOPS, although we keep getting such a question. But this is how, you know, design the you know cloud storage, Azure storage, to run NetWeaver, and also BW and HANA as well. So, you know, if you look at the application like ECC, BW, SCM, Business Suite, and NetWeaver, you know the database consists of data files, and also log files, and DB buffer pool. This is applicable to SQL 2014 and 16. So maybe I can cover these two above. So for database file, you know, depending on the IOPS requirement, you can have a multiple N times premium storage P20 or P30 disk. So I'm hoping to issue the SAP note, which is crystal clear and very detailed and very prescriptive in this guideline. So I'm going to update and just post it in as an SAP note. So N is determined by the IOPS, which is required. Then host caching setting should be read only. I think, you know, just to your point, is like, for example, there's a SAP transaction called ST04, or maybe in case of SQL Server, it is DBA cockpit, in which you can check the you know kind of latency, millisecond per operation, which means you know once you know you know when a database is trying to do a read operation, SAP is checking you know the kind of latency or you know how quick IO respond to the database software. I would say, you know, so the criteria should be less than 20 milliseconds in front of the customer. If this number is like, you know, 50 milliseconds or 100 milliseconds, I'm seeing quite a few partner, you know, having designing the Azure storage, you know, like that way, then I have to say, I'm sorry, you have to redesign, reset up, you know, underneath storage, which is not a good thing for partner. It's embarrassment. So that is why, you know, I have this table so that you do not need to make any unnecessary mistake. This is really important. Then I think, you know, as Rick mentioned yesterday, sometimes customers say, you know, Azure is not performing well, then it is very likely to be, you know, misconfiguration of the cloud, you know, of the storage. So this is important. So let's make sure that you know you use a premium storage, multiple, for database file, for log file. It can be just one single premium storage disk because this is more latency rather than IOPS. So to boost the writing operation to log file, IOPS doesn't really matter. Latency matters. So just one premium storage disk is good to have a 2 or 3 millisecond, you know, millisecond per operation. Non-IO critical system like, you know, enterprise portal, XIPI, BI, Java, GRC, BO, BI, at this moment, I would say, you know, my customer, it is, you know, so maybe we might need to switch our guideline to make our guideline as simple as possible. But this moment, I do not see many, compelling reason to push premium storage, to be very honest. But I might update this guideline because SAP note is always true. So, because, you know, EP, XIP, I'm not sure about XIP, but EP, BA, Java, you know, once you identify, IO is not very heavy, you might want to use, standard storage. If you use a standard storage, you need to attach as many disks as you can to maximize the IOPS. So this is also critical. Ideally, you use premium storage for all production systems. But I keep hearing, okay, John. Yeah, so for example, I think I have another slide. Sorry, it's a busy slide, but I think this is useful for your sizing. So let's say you pick up D11, not DS, to save a cost. Then D11 can attach four data disks. Just only four. So which means standard storage give you a 500 maximum IOPS. So you can have a 2000 maximum IOPS with D11. So it is very tiny BA Java or ZLC system. Then you can attach four data disk. Then our guideline saying two data files per disk. So you are going to have, the three out of four will be used for data file, one is used for a log file, then you can have six database files of a SQL Server Oracle database into these three data disks. So that is our guideline. That is what I'm trying to, explain, in this table. Does that make sense? Okay, so yeah, I mean, I understand. Sorry about that.
The question is for the two data file per disk, in order to maximize the IOPS, you want to put one data file per disk, yes? But here you're recommending two data file per disk.
Yeah, so
in a production environment, you want maximum throughput. So that's
okay. So the question is how to optimize IO performance of SAP database. Then what's recommended reference IO architecture to boost optimize the IO performance. This is just going back to our traditional database best practice around SQL Server, Oracle database. I'm not sure about HANA database at this moment, but our recommendation to place two data files per disk is it's not very much for IO performance. It is more agility to be able to change the database layout. So by having two data files per disk, then you can pick up one of them, then you can move to another disk to increase the number of disk. So that is why I put this point in this. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I have less than 15 minutes left. Then I have some slide to finish. So this is a backup architecture, and Matt and I getting lots of questions from customers because, you know, in cloud, you lose a sound storage snapshot type of backup. We don't have it. Cloud doesn't have sound storage backup. Although we have it in HANA on Azure bare metal that we are going to release in August and September timeframe. But in the virtual machine, there's no sound snapshot backup. So that is why we kind of come up with a recommendation how to design end-to-end backup process. So let's say you are running, this can be SQL Server, or this can be BW HANA database in Azure Virtual Machine, like a GS5 that we are going to cover this afternoon. So you need to take a backup of this database of HANA and SQL Server. You might want to run a database standard backup feature, like a SQL Server has a standard feature to take an online backup, offline backup. HANA is the same, Oracle is the same. In case of Oracle, it is a BR2 that the ACV provide, but it is Oracle standard backup. The question is, where backup files, stored. You can imagine, just in case you place, backup file locally into the same premier storage, you can imagine you lose access to this database server VM. Then you lose access to the most critical, most recent database backup. So our recommendation, this is kind of general recommendation for every database is you can have a kind of separate server. Then backup should be stored in this storage, rather than storing the recent backup in this local storage. It need to be separate. Then, what storage type you should use? Is it can be standard storage, it can be premium storage. I mean, if DB size is just like a 200, 300, gigabytes, very tiny. This can be standard storage. But I have to say that, if the DB size like, the 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, then I have to ask customer to look into a premium storage, even if it's just 2 P30 disk. But I am strongly recommending you to consider premium storage for backup data storage as well. Because this is really critical backup operation, then backup speed is also really critical for you to kind of operate this system. So premium storage has just it is just local redundant is the only option that you can use. So just 3 physical location, we are doing a kind of a RAID type of operation underneath. But if your finance, your customer's finance says this finance data, this FICO data need to be retained for 10 years due to audit reason, then if you have a big chunk of premium storage to store 10-year data, this can be ridiculous. That is why we have another commodity, a backup storage named Azure Backup Vault. If you see the price tag of this Azure Backup Vault, I have something for this afternoon's case study session. Azure Backup Vault is very commodity, very cheap. So maybe you can store all the transaction log file and maybe 2 or 3 full database backup into this premier storage. But you can run Windows batch job or maybe Linux script to transfer all the generation of backup to Azure Backup or maybe once a day. This way, you can store, you know, you can have a long-term backup location, and this is really cheap, rather than having everything in, you know, a premium storage. So this way, you can minimize the cost of a backup, and you can take an online backup. Then backup server is your choice. It can be database standard. It can be Veritas, Commvault, or maybe System Center. It is your choice. Is it very clear? I think we got to this question yesterday, so I think I just wanted to clarify. Okay, so for the interest time, I just wanted to quickly introduce what we have for the setup procedure. So I think you already got this PowerPoint slide in GitHub, so you can download. I think in the next 2 or 3 months, we are going to update this installation guidance to support version 2 or ARM deployment model. Currently, it's a version 1 ASM deployment model, which is our guideline to set up a production system. But you can get the latest version of this document in this link. So you can click this link to get the latest version. And also, I hesitated to post all the screenshots that I took, because it can be 500, 600, PowerPoint slides. You have access to all the screenshots that I took to kind of, this is more step by step. So I think this is, just give me 5 minutes to finish this. Okay, the question?
Is RDBM supported for VMs, raw disk management?
Sorry, say that again.
RDM, raw disk management.
RDM, you mean Azure Resource Manager?
With respect to Oracle, if you use ASM, then we can write data directly on the disks rather than creating data files. So some VMs will be supported RDM, some will not support. So do we have such kind of support in Azure? If I go with Oracle.
Did you get the question?
RDM, you mean raw disk? Yep.
The question is whether raw disk management is supported on Azure storage.
Yep.
I don't believe so, because we don't deal with raw disks in similar fashions like Oracle managing its own storage. Even Oracle automated storage management is not supported to run Oracle on Azure and Azure storage. So therefore, the answer for RDM is not supported, okay?
And another quick question. Coming to the backup, so whenever the backup is running on the DB, definitely there will be an overhead on the database, at least 20% to 30%, right? Yeah. So if you don't have snapshot backup, which will be done a little quicker, what kind of other technologies we have so that we can complete the backup rather than having database overhead for the longer run?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what are the solution to for the data protection and backup for the SAP database and also system OS and the system? Then I think you're looking for more, so I think your concern is more backup runtime. Is that correct?
Backup duration and the stress on the database.
Okay. So backup duration, as of now, if you look at Azure or any other hyperscale cloud, I mean, I'm excluding our HANA or NAS or bare metal offering, which is completely different. If you look at the hyperscale, you know, infrastructure service provider, vendor, there's no such a solution. I mean, there's no snapshot. So backup, for example, in case you use backup exec or combo, the system center or database standard feature, you might need to wait for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Is there anything?
So the questions of how would one avoid the impact on the production or primary replicas during your backup, right? The answer for that is if you are using SQL Server, always on availability group, the backup can be performed off of the secondary replicas, avoiding completely the impact of backup against the primary. Okay, but other technologies, they may be offering similar things, maybe Oracle, say, and IBM DB2, maybe, which you should investigate.
I am suggesting this architecture to minimize the impact to the production system. So that is why premium storage for production database server VM and also a premium storage for backup server, these two are really helpful to minimize the overhead to the production system. Backup duration, because this is online backup, so you need to be a bit patient.
Does Microsoft has a roadmap for snapshot, VM snapshot in the future? I mean, this will help tremendously SAP customer, mm-hmm. especially around backup.
Okay.
What he mentioned is true. Every time there's an Oracle backup, BR backup or any long backup,
yeah.
There's major performance issue.
You are not first guy, just getting bringing such feedback to Microsoft. And I take that in my note and I just bring back to the product team. So sorry, I think I need to finish. So just give me to quickly go through. So then just two minutes, okay? I mean, I am trying to show the setup process of this SAP on SQL in Azure environment. High availability for central service and database server, and also disaster recovery of the database. I put all the installation process. So although this is very busy slide, but maybe you can check all the installation process. It might be useful for you to come up with a naming convention of the different object that we have. So in case of ASM version 1 model, it is a cloud service, internal load balancer, storage, premiums, standard, file share, service account, virtual network, subnet, resource group. I mean, I'm bringing all the objects that you need to set up to really set up the entire production system. I think this is this is a very detailed slide. I think this is eventually very useful for you to really create, set up the entire environment in a very detail. So I will not go in very detail on this slide, but please feel free to just reach out to me if you have any technical detail question. I think this is a good lead for you to set up the environment, okay?